My daddy has lots of books, and he likes to read books. And he interviews authors at KAZI. You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
Ed Kovacs' new murder mystery, Burnt Black, is the third novel he's written featuring New Orleans police detective Cliff St. James. Kovacs' fascination with New Orleans began when he arrived as a security consultant shortly after Hurricane Katrina. Despite the devastation surrounding him, he says he got a sense of what makes New Orleans a great city and considers it a character in his Cliff St. James murder mysteries. In Burnt Black, St. James and his partner, Honey, investigate a series of deaths that appear to be related to an occult group led by a university professor in New Orleans. The investigation reveals the different perspectives the partners have on the occult, causing conflict, which is exacerbated by their on-again, off-again relationship. When Ed Kovacs is not writing novels, he's working as a private security contractor deploying to challenging locations worldwide. Ed Kovacs, welcome to KAZI Book Review.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, Ed, I believe this is your third novel featuring the police officer slash private investigator Cliff St. James, all set in New Orleans. But let's start off with you sharing, what is it about the city of New Orleans that attracted you to writing fiction based in New Orleans?
Well, it's funny because the first time I saw New Orleans was a few days after Hurricane Katrina hit. I was sent in as a private security contractor, and we were working under the auspices of the Louisiana Department of Homeland Security to help secure the folks that were trying to get the telecommunication system back up and running, because, as you know, phones and cell phones and, the city was just in such bad shape. And so I saw New Orleans at its worst, and Those were really tough days for everybody, including first responders that went in and were there to try and help. But as I got to know the city and ended up spending 2.5 years there, I started to really get a sense of what it must have been like and how great it really was, because, I had never been there. And then I heard from some police buddies of mine, because, working in what I was doing, we quickly made friends with the military and police and everybody that was there helping to kind of restore things. And I heard about the last murder that had taken place just as Hurricane Katrina was about to hit the city. And I thought, wow, what a great jumping off point for a murder mystery. And, one thing led to the other, and I ended up meeting some policemen who had responded to the murder scene of this fellow, and then it was almost like just serendipity, and I just had a feeling I needed to write that book.
So what was it that attracted you to the mystery slash crime fiction genre? Was it your security and enforcement background?
Well, that kind of dovetails with it, and, I'd been working professionally as off and on as a writer, ever since I was back in college. And I worked in Hollywood and had written action scripts and everything from sci-fi to comedy and drama and so forth. And I always had I loved reading commercial fiction. I would love picking up a book at an airport, bookstore, a page turner, as they call it, something that just kept you biting your nails. And I always wanted to write one, but it had just never really presented itself to me until I finally wrote one back in 2004. And that one's called Unseen Forces. And I self-published that book. And I would put that in kind of the genre of like the Tom Clancy's and Vince Flynn's. It's kind of action, adventure, espionage, thriller. And the funny thing is, I was doing a little book tour to promote that book right when Hurricane Katrina hit the city. And so I had to drop everything and go to New Orleans. And I ended up spending, like I said, 2.5 years there and ended up falling in love with the city. But, I really felt that as an outsider, I had to create a character who was also an outsider, Hopeton, because it seemed like the only legitimate way to approach, what I wanted to do, because people who are not born and raised, you know, in the South or in the Gulf area, don't have the same feel and understanding for the place that locals do. And I think if you've, you know, we've all seen some of the movies set in New Orleans, and the response is often, this is bogus. So I thought, well, how can I write a book set there? I've only lived here for 2.5 years. So I simply created a character who, like me, was also an outsider, but I think who had observations and impressions and opinions that were still legitimate.
Now, the character is Cliff St. James, and his partner is Honey, and they respond to a couple of bodies found in the house of a prominent professor, and we start dabbling here in the occult. Tell us about Cliff St. James and the relationship he has with Honey, because just they have a bit of a strained relationship there. Will they or won't they kind of relationship?
Yeah, I tried to create in all three books, and I think more so in the first two, New Orleans is a character in the books, and a dysfunctional character, because New Orleans is a dysfunctional place. I mean, it's a great place, but it's a little dysfunctional. And I think my heroes are both dysfunctional. And but just as New Orleans is worth saving, regardless of how severely damaged it was and how dysfunctional it might be, my characters are worth saving. And they have this dysfunctional relationship. They're best friends, and they sleep together, and they'll kiss, but they're not lovers. They've never became lovers. And so it's a very odd kind of a relationship, and it does get strained in the third book, Burnt Black, that just came out. And I don't know. I think eventually I'll get them together, you know, but I'm not sure how far down the line in the series that might be.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ed Kovacs. He's the author of his third Cliff St. James novel, all set in New Orleans, Burnt Black. Now, not only do they have this strained relationship or this kind of unique relationship with lots of unfulfilled sexual tension, but they don't necessarily agree on the cause of these deaths and what's the swirl around this occult group that Professor Drake is running. What kind of tension are we finding between the two partners on trying to solve this case?
A lot of tension, because it's the first time that they've worked together where they weren't on the same page. And that was deliberate, because this case is so strange and so unusual that I wanted it to have an impact not only in their investigative techniques and their success at what they were looking into, but on their personal relationship. And they can't seem to agree on anything, so this is very odd. And just like everything else that's happening to them, it seems to be very odd. And, you know, what the book is really about, as opposed to what the plot is to find out who's committing these killings that seem to be connected to this occult group. What the book is really about is causing both of my hero and my heroine, who are very tough customers, you know. Cliff St. James is a tough guy, and Honey is one squared away female police detective. They're not afraid of anything physical, but they've never had before to confront something that was really non-physical. And so what the book is really about is how they react and what their beliefs really are in terms of things occult. And so I thought that would be interesting to explore.
How much did you find living in New Orleans that the people that you interacted with believed in the occult, believed in voodoo? Because, of course, this is a major part of the book, and there's references to a lot of different places you can buy things to do occultist types of participate in occult type of activities. How much of this is based on what you saw and observed while living in New Orleans?
I saw a lot of evidence of it. I can't say I was, you know, I wasn't going to any kind of active workings or ceremonies or anything, but I knew people that were involved in, you know, alternative beliefs there. And I can remember riding around the French Quarter, maybe 6 months after Hurricane Katrina hit. I was with a police officer buddy of mine, and I said, wow, that's some really interesting-looking gang graffiti there. And he said, that's not gang graffiti, that's a voodoo sigil. And I said, a what? And he said, it's a voodoo sigil. And that's when I first started learning about a little bit about, you know, voodoo and how it's practiced locally. I think there are a lot of people, to answer your question, that have connections to it because, you know, so many folks in New Orleans, as you know, their families go back generations. And back in the day, when people like Marie Laveau were alive and kicking, personages, they wielded tremendous influence and power over the police and the city hall and the movers and shakers of the day, and that impacted on a lot of the population. So I think it kind of runs, you know, into families. And yeah, I knew some people who practiced it, but they kind of kept that to themselves. But I think the whole, you know, it's one of the things that makes New Orleans such a wonderfully different part of America.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ed Kovacs. He's the author of his third Cliff St. James novel, Burnt Black. As you did your research for the occult side of the book, did you, outside of the experiences you already had, did you actually go and do some additional research, visit voodoo shops, talk to voodoo practitioners, do a lot of reading, or was the occult aspects of the book sort of an organic process, i.e. you just wrote it as you thought of it and didn't do any additional research?
I always do lots of research because, you know, I try to bring as much veracity to my work as I can. So I read a whole bunch of books on voodoo and spiritualism and did research on the internet. Plus, I went back and talked to some folks because all three of my books, unfortunately, I don't live in New Orleans anymore, but all three of my books, I've always gone back and done, you know, spent a week doing extra research and interviews and so forth. So I did a lot of that. I went into the voodoo shops. I talked to some of the folks who practice, and I, you know, I kind of tried to go out of my way in the book to make sure that I wasn't indicting the believers or practitioners of voodoo or Palo Mayombe or Santiera, these other Afro-Caribbean religions that took root in the Gulf. Most of those folks are good folks, and you know, but you know, hey, I'm writing a book about a group that's, they're not voodoo practitioners per se, but it's one of the things they do, and there's a bad apple amongst them who's killing some people. So I've also got a lot of experience because, you know, personally, I've studied over the years with Native American medicine chiefs, and I've studied with shamans in Asia and in South America and so forth. So I kind of brought some of my own experience into the mix as well.
Now, portraying the New Orleans Police Department, how did you handle that situation? Because from the outside, the New Orleans Police Department hasn't always had the best public reputation and has been, at least in the media, portrayed as at times, as being a very corrupt police department, and some things happened during Hurricane Katrina. So how did you handle portraying the New Orleans Police Department in the novel?
Well, you know, I think that the 33-33-33 rule kind of applies to NOPD. 33 and a third percent of the officers aren't very good, and 33 and a third percent are somewhere in the middle, and 33 and a third percent are pretty good. I know lots of police officers in NOPD and in Jefferson Parish Sheriffs, and they got a tough job, and I wouldn't want to have it, quite frankly. I criticize the department plenty of times in all three of my books, but I also point out there's good people working in it too. It's a corrupt department, but think about how corrupt. I mean, I don't want to put any more corruption on New Orleans than people heap so much on it, you know, and on the city as being so corrupt. And yeah, I point out the corruption in my stories, but gosh, Chicago, Boston, New York, I mean, you know, New Orleans does not have a corner on police corruption. Now, I think that they obviously had some horrible problems with the behavior of officers during Hurricane Katrina, unlawful shootings and turning, you know, other things that happened that have been well documented. No excuse for that. It was horrible times for everybody, and there was plenty of bad behavior. And hey, in my books, the chief, you know, my fictional chief of the department is about as dirty as you can get. And
practically dirty, like he's a practical kind of dirty.
Yes, he's a very practical guy, and I'm humanizing him a little more in the third book. You know, he's referencing talks he has with his pastor, and he admits he's not well liked, but he's trying to do the best he can. And I think that applied to a lot of the police during Katrina. You know, they were the ones that stayed, and really they tried to do the best they could. I was there, not in the immediate aftermath, but I can tell you that people were scared. You know, I mean, National Guard troops were shooting dogs at one point, and they were scared. You know, they didn't want to get rabies, they didn't want to get attacked. So when I was there, we had to confront dogs and stuff all the time, but we fed the dogs. So, you know, should you judge the people who react badly? Well, yeah, you have to judge them, but you also have to understand, I think. So I do not sugarcoat my feelings about the city. The city's got lots of problems, and the infrastructure and the bureaucracy has lots of problems. And part of what I do in my books is a little social commentary and talk about that. That doesn't mean, you know, that I'm a critic of the place. It just means that, you know, I call it the way I see it.
One of the things that I think you really did a good job of in the book is sort of these betrayals, these using of people, these kind of hidden agendas that some of the characters had. And I thought that was sort of like a real life thing in terms of always not knowing whether or not this person is has plans for you, making you think one thing, but actually planning something else. I really like the way you handled that.
Well, thanks. And I must say that I really enjoy writing stories where few things are as they seem and few people can be trusted, and where there's plenty of people to suspect and the truth is kind of a moving target. And I think that if some thriller writers are a little bit more, you know, if you're reading like the guys writing conspiracy espionage stuff, some of them are kind of, hoorah America, and some of them are a little more truthful in how they present things. And the truth is, there's a lot of times you have to worry about the people you work for more than you have to worry about the enemy. And that's kind of a sad commentary, but that's really the way it is. So I choose to write stories that I try to make a little bit more realistic, at least from my own experience working in, the security realm and doing contracts with the U.S. government and some of the other things I do.
When you've gotten feedback from your readers on the book, what are some of the most fascinating and interesting feedback or emails you've gotten about your book, Burnt Black, or you've gotten about characters from your books in the past?
You know, it seems like it falls into two categories. They love reading about the city, and they love the seedy bars that I'll write about, or the other places my characters go into. And I get a lot of comments saying, you really have to get Cliff and Honey together. You've got to get those two together. and I think I will. I just don't know when. It's extremely gratifying to me, Hopeton, when I get an email from a reader that says, you're just as good as Baldacci or Clancy or any of these other guys, and I'm going to buy all your books. Well, boy, you know, that, talk about something that goes right to the heart. You know, you love getting those kinds of comments, and I just hope that that people, you know, I try to bring as much genuine honesty to my work as I can, and I just hope that kind of is able to get across to the readers.
Well, I'm hoping that we see more of the CIA agent.
Oh, you're talking about the Vietnamese American girl, yes.
Yes, yes. I'm hoping to see more of her in your next Cliff St. James novel. Can you commit to that right now on the air?
For you, I will do it.
Yeah, I did like that character. Wanted to see that character a little bit more. I'm looking at your background, and you have a bit of a, I won't say mysterious background, but it shows that you're a member of the Association for Intelligence Officers, of course, the International Thriller Writers and the Mystery Writers of America. But I'm concentrating on Association for Intelligence Officers. So is there something that you can share with us about your background that would give us a little bit of understanding of how you look at things as a detective or CIA agent type?
Well, I can tell you that I still work as a security contractor overseas, and I work on classified assignments, usually of a counter-espionage nature. I hold a security clearance, and I get sent to usually some really, really bad places that you wouldn't want to visit. Sometimes I luck out, and I got to do 4 months in the south of France on the French Riviera.
You didn't really want that assignment, did you?
No. It was a four-man team, and we had vehicles, and so I would get a day off and drive to Italy and eat at, you know, cafes on the Mediterranean, and that was some wonderful duty. But usually they send us to some really rotten place where, you know, the food will kill you if the bullets don't. And so I can't get into it too much, and I'm not being frivolous, because I have to sign very strict non-disclosure agreements and not even to discuss which countries I go into sometimes. So you can imagine that I get lots of ideas for thriller novels based on some of these assignments that I still do. And when I go somewhere, maybe I'm going for 2 weeks or maybe I'm going for 6 months. It just kind of depends on what the job is. And I can tell you that I am. We are launching a new a thriller series. St. Martin's contracted me to launch a new series with a security contractor hero. And so the first book is done, and that's going to come out next year, I think, or 2015. And in the meantime, I've got some more ideas for New Orleans, because I need more excuses to go back there. That's just such a great place.
So tell us your favorite places to eat in New Orleans.
Oh, well, I used to love going to a place that was, when I was living in Mid-City, there was a place called Pampy's on Broad Street. Now, I've heard they've closed down, but a lot of it was kind of a Creole hangout, so a lot of the politicians and people in city government used to go there, and it was great rubbing elbows with those folks. But you know, I'm a guy who is just as happy in some really expensive joint as I am eating bar food at Coop's over on Decatur in the French Quarter. There is so much good food there, and I always get in as you know, you read Burnt Black. I always manage to get in at least one or two restaurant scenes.
Because, yes,
my Lord, I tell everybody I know. I say, please go to New Orleans, spend a long weekend. You don't ever have to leave the French Quarter, but if you do, there's a whole world of great stuff outside the quarter. And spend money, because those people still need the tourist dollar to come in and help support the ongoing recovery.
Your favorite mystery or thriller writers, living or dead, that you would say had the most influence, the ones you admired the most?
I have to say, I'm the one person who's probably responsible for getting me into writing thrillers was Robert Ludlum. He is he passed away a few years back, and now after he passed away, they started doing the Jason Bourne films, and Matt Damon did three of them, and then the fourth one was some other fellow. Robert Ludlum was so good with plot. He's regarded as really one of the master plotters, you know, in the pantheon of thriller writers. And his books, and then I read Shibumi by an author whose pen name was Trevanian, and talk about conspiracy, you know, culpability of the U.S. government and, you know, the big oil companies and their assassination squads and, you know, an exotic Japanese, you know, mistress that the hero is involved in. You know, it's just that kind of global, exotic, locale, action, adventure, sexy stuff that it just rang my chimes from a young age. And then here I am now putting words to paper, trying to follow in the footsteps of some of those masters.
Ed Kovacs, author of the third Cliff St. James novel, Burnt Black. His website is edkovacs.com, and that's K-O-V as in victory, A-C-S.com. Thanks for being a guest on KZI Book Review.
Hopeton, thank you so much for your time, and please keep up your good work.
Thanks for listening to KZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. If you want to keep up with upcoming guests on KZI Book Review, you can go to my Facebook page, KZI Book Review, or you can follow me on Twitter under @KAZI Books. Have a great day.